Welcome back to the podcast, everyone. And this really special double drop this weekend, conversations with two of my newest favorite people, together whom make up the band Sun and the Saint. It's been really fun being connected to other humans via former guests, and I need to say thank you to Angela Petrilli, who introduced me to not only Paloma Estevez, but also Reed Thomas Lawrence, whose episode drops tomorrow. Now, this episode is all about Paloma. Here's the really thoughtful bio she sent me. Paloma Estevez is a Los Angeles-born drummer and co-creator of the pop rock blues duo Sun and the Saint. Raised in a family of entertainers, she discovered her rhythm early, first on trombone, then behind a drum kit where her deep pocket and explosive energy quickly set her apart. Over the past two decades, she's performed everywhere from small clubs to stadium crowds, sharing stages with artists like Slash, Berlin, and El Chicano, and appearing on film scores and ESPN features. Now, as the heartbeat of Sun and the Saint, Paloma channels that same power and precision into a sound that's raw, soulful, and unapologetically alive. Now, when we talk about a family of entertainers, we're talking about Martin Sheen and Emilio Estevez. And I'm sure you've never heard about those two, right? But for those of you who've been following the pod for a bit, you'll all have heard my episode 100, where I got interviewed and tell the tale of how I came to walk the Camino and Martin Sheen and Emilio Estevez's movie The Way was part of that mysterious journey. I finally got to tell Paloma what a massive impact that movie made on me and how it changed my life. So one lifelong dream achieved. In this episode, I asked Paloma to share a favorite tour memory, and she emailed me a story earlier this week. And before the outro, there is a little snippet where I read the story that Paloma shared with me, and then, if all goes well, the outro music is from Sun and the Saint. They were so kind to share a song with me to use during the episode. Titled Take Me Back to California, it's a groovy song with a sexy beat that is sure to get you dancing. So now, here's Paloma Estevez and our conversation this episode.
So I didn't set out blindly on this mission. I've written everything down. I wrote him down too, like 2 years before I met him. And I wrote down everything. I wrote down the type of person he is, what he's into, like the qualities that I'd, and it wasn't him specifically. It was what I wanted in a partner, musically and intimately too. And it's weird. So I've been doing this my whole life. I've written stuff down. And so that's why I'm like, wow, I wish I could like think of all the things. There's been like so many like that I've written down. And I look at it years later and I'm like, oh, it's word for word. Like, it's not like, oh, it's kind of that. It's like, literally I spelled it out. So I've had that happen many years. I believe in the power of humans. I believe in our power, our ability to co-create our own environments.
Question for every person is, how do you self-describe? If you had to go to a party and you have to meet a bunch of people there and they're like, who are you? Or I already know you get up on a stage. And sure. I mean, you have the guts to do that. Okay. How would you introduce yourself in general?
Yeah, I would, at a party, I would introduce myself as Paloma Estevez. And if somebody asked me what I do, I would say that I'm a musician and that I have my own band. And then usually people ask, what do you play? And I say, I play drums and I sing background vocals now. And I co-created and co-produced the album for our band. So I'm really excited about that.
Yeah. Amazing. Amazing. And, you know, I obviously know you come from a very creative family. Did you feel when you were a kid, were you like, I'm going to go into the arts? Like, no matter what it looks like, I'm an artist and that's what I'm going to do.
Yeah. And I wish I had that kind of, you know, wisdom as a younger kid. Sometimes I get a little envious of kids who knew it at such a young age. I feel like it kind of just bobbed along, you know, for a really long time. But I did definitely gravitate towards music, and sports was my other thing, but everything else in school, I'd never really cared about. So I think it was probably obvious that I was the musician, but maybe not to me until later in life. You know, like, everyone was like, oh, that's what she should do. But I was like, I don't know. I just like playing.
So was it easy for you?
To play drums, it was easy. Yeah. But the things I do now, which is sing background vocals while I'm playing, not so easy. That's taken a lot of time to develop. But playing drums was pretty easy for me. Yeah.
Okay. Okay. And do you have any siblings? I didn't look that up.
Oh, that's okay. Yeah. I have a brother. His name's Taylor Estevez. Oh. And he works more behind the scenes in film and TV.
Amazing. So creative as well. It's like this genetic legacy. Well, I mean, I have to tell you that I can't dance. I mean, like literally I have no rhythm. And then I don't know if when you were in school, in elementary school, did you have to do the whole like study the recorder for 6 months and then practice? You did that.
Yeah. Definitely the recorder. I think I was terrible at it. Like everybody else was, you know.
Okay. So, well, I was really bad. And I just knew that music, I did not have that capacity, but it's kind of surprising that you were bad at the recorder and now you're on stage in a band and you're great.
Oh, thank you. I appreciate that. Yeah. It definitely has come with a lot of practice. I still get super nervous before I get on stage. And I think every musician does, whether they admit it or not. I always like wake up, like feel a little like worried and self-conscious. And then I feel like after the first song passes, then I'm able to like get in the music and not think about what anyone thinks and think about how good I feel. And I love playing music so much. So that kind of takes over. So thankfully.
Okay. And then, I mean, I find it intriguing, this recorder piece for you, because the recorder was the bane of my existence for a while. And I kind of felt like I was being punished for something by and I also was like, who else's mouth has been on this recorder? Because I don't care how good they clean this thing. It's kind of disgusting. And yes. I want to throw up everywhere. But so like, at what age did you kind of think, okay, music, I can do this. This is something I can do.
Yeah. I guess I really always liked it past the recorder. I think I blocked out playing the recorder. I know I had to. And I know I had to sing in school too. My school had like a chorus. Can you hear me? Okay. Mm-hmm. Okay, cool. My school had chorus classes. You had to sing and I really didn't like that. But I actually played another instrument between recorder and drums, which was trombone. And that was like my first, I know it's hilarious. I was like totally a band geek. And that was my first love of music, was playing classical music. And I loved being surrounded by music. It was like getting to be in surround sound. And that was probably my favorite part of it. And I loved classical. And then I joined the jazz band. And then, that's when I started getting envious of the drummer, because I thought, oh, that's cool. I want to do that. Like, I want to play the drum set. That's way cooler than like, you know, playing trombone. So I started playing drums at 13. Yeah.
Okay. Okay. You know, it's really interesting, because I was in swing choir in high school in the Midwest, and we actually went to Opryland and performed and went to other places and performed. And, you know, I am just going to also admit to you, I think I already did, that I'm not a good dancer, and rhythm, yeah. I'm like terrible. So in swing choir, you have to dance and sing at the same time. And sometimes that was like beyond me. And I'm like, I don't even know why, like I can sing, Yeah. It'd be fine. And as long as I'm standing still, but then when you have to make me move, it's like, I'm going to need to practice for hours. So I thought that was so interesting that, you know, you're a great drummer. You've gotten on stage, you've done all this. Now you're adding background vocals. And that's like a whole other level of coordination, right?
Oh yeah. Yeah. Cause drums, you're already doing, I feel like it's always more than four things. You're playing with all four limbs, but you're also usually listening to like a metronome and you're thinking about that. Like you're thinking about so much, like what's happening. Hopefully not too much. Like you want to be feeling the music, but yeah, to add the vocals on top of it, it makes your brain just go like totally haywire until it clicks, which is the fun part about being a drummer, is like that click feeling. And you know, you've rewired your brain is a very satisfying feeling. And it just, yeah, it's just kind of like addictive maybe.
No, it totally is. Yeah. It's like everything seamlessly comes together and it almost like sneaks up on you where you think, wait, how and when did that happen? Because suddenly everything's working now, at least for me, you know, when I was finally able to dance and sing at the same time, I was like, when did that happen? You know, I'm like not the most graceful person. I'm like the bull in the china shop. I was kind of thinking about that the other day. Like, you do not hire me for anything that's delicate. Okay. Because I'm going to end up, which made me great at soccer, by the way.
You just charge through the
oh, yeah. Route. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I just, you know, my name in high school was Kamikaze Kirsten. Just going to put that out there. But awesome. I think I was working out some anger from my parents' divorce, maybe a little bit. So. Sure. Soccer's soccer is a great space to do that. What kind of sports did you do? Actually, I'm so intrigued.
Oh, sure. I always loved the water. So I was big at school. I was on the swim team. That was like my main thing. And then outside of school, I started skateboarding was actually my first sport. I think I was 4 years old when I got my first skateboard, and I learned how to skate with all the cute, like, skater boys in the neighborhood. And they were all like twice my age, like teaching me how to skateboard. And then, so I was pretty good at that. And then I took up snowboarding and then surfing is my other love. Cause I love the water. So, but now I don't really skate anymore, but I do surf. That's like my sport now, surfing.
Oh my God. You're a badass.
Oh, thank you.
I did try surfing once off the Oregon coast, and I forget what town we were in, but the waves were tiny. And always the people on the beach were like, okay, just, you know, we have orcas here. So if you look like a seal from below, it's not our problem if you get taken away. And I was like, dear God, I'm going to stay. I don't care about being a good surfer. I'm just going to pretend and play. And it is really playful and it's really fun. And I mean, I don't know if for you, like I put pressure on myself, but once I release the pressure and the expectation to be perfect, then there's more space for me to actually improve with things. I never improved at surfing, but it sounds like you had a really, I don't know, fun childhood, because I did not skateboard. I cannot snowboard. I'm just going to put I go way too fast and can't stop when I'm on any sort of mountain. So I'm like lethal for everyone around me. I did actually, have you ever been to Sun Valley?
Have actually. Yeah.
God, okay. Yeah. So
I went there when I was a kid. Yeah.
So I went twice over the holidays for several weeks. I never graduated to the actual mountain. I stayed on Baldy or the Kids Mountain, which I loved. I was very happy about being on the Kids Mountain. And partially because, you know, the runs are so short. So then you can go back up and just do it again. Mm-hmm. But the funniest thing happened. It was they had all these young men from Argentina who were there, you know, working for the season. And one of them said, you know, why are you here? And I was like, do you just see how bad I am? I mean, I like fall all the time. And he said, yeah, but you go up and down and up and down and up and down. And I was like, isn't that the point? And then we laughed a little bit and I was like, maybe that's not the point, but you really have to seriously develop some major muscles.
Oh, for snowboarding?
Oh, yes.
Yeah. Yeah, you do. Yeah. Yeah, it's like all the intricacies of your legs you never use. Yeah, it's a hard sport.
Oh, yeah. Oh, my God. So kudos to you. Kudos to you that you still do all that stuff.
I don't skateboard or snowboard anymore, to be honest. That was growing up. Those were big for me. But now it's surfing, because if I fall surfing, I fall into the water and not on the concrete and not on the snow. So I'm okay with that.
That's better. That's better. I just saw and I shared this awesome reel that you guys created. I love the point of view of it from behind you, you know, and you can hear the audience, you know, the audience starts cheering, but you can't really see them. And it's kind of mysterious and intriguing. And I thought, oh my God, I love this point of view. So whoever made that, hello, big, like, I'm worshiping you right now. But I just loved seeing you two on stage and how much people respect you and are excited to hear what you're going to do. And so my question is, how did you two meet and decide to form a band?
Yeah, we met actually playing in another band together. So I've been playing drums professionally for a long time, but I played for multiple bands. So I was in, at one point, I've been in up to 10 bands. It's ridiculous. I know. And it's like, I don't even know which show I was showing up to after a while. Like, oh, I hope I know the songs. And so that's what I did for a living for a long time. And I decided to, at this point, when I met Reed, that's what I was doing. I was playing for a lot of people. I think when I met him, I was playing for maybe 4 or 5 bands, like nothing crazy. It was manageable. And, we just totally clicked in this band. And I remember we played this show in LA and he played this guitar solo. And for me, like, I get like launched when I hear a good guitar player. Like it's like an outer body experience. And I feel like I had that when he played his solo and it was just like, oh my God, like it was so, it's just like, you know, it's music to my ears, but like literally like my whole body was like, wow, this is so good. And I just remember that moment. And I don't think he knows how good he is at guitar, especially. And we just really clicked. Like we hung out that night and we clicked musically. And so we were talking like maybe like a week or two later about that I really wanted to be on a full album as a drummer. I'd been playing drums for over 20 years. I hadn't really had like an album that I could give to somebody that I was really proud of. And I feel like at that point and at this point in my career, it was frustrating for me. I was like, God, I played like, I don't know, like over 10,000 shows easily. Like, I don't even know how many shows I've played in my lifetime. It's a ridiculous number. But I still don't have something I can give somebody, you know, like I can show up live, I can play, but I don't have this like thing that I made. And we talked about it for a while and I was going to be that year. I was supposed to be on 2 records for other artists and they both got canceled. And I was just like, I was very frustrated, right? I was like, wow, like I really was like excited about this. There were musicians I really looked up to and I was excited about, and it didn't work out. And it's fine because it made us have this conversation of like, well, why don't we do it? Like, why don't we write the music? Why don't we start a band? Like, why don't we write an album? Like, let's just do it. And so that's how it was born. It's like kind of out of a good mixture of like desire, frustration, and love just like brought it all together, which I'm so grateful for now. Yeah.
Wow. It's, you know, a couple of things. It's so interesting because, you know, when I interviewed Angela, she also alluded to the fact that in her past she had, you know, at one point been in multiple bands at the same time.
Yeah.
And I thought to myself, what? I mean, I don't, that just seems, and then you said 10. Mm-hmm. I thought to myself, easily. How did you juggle that schedule?
The schedule is pretty stressful because you have to like say yes and no a lot. Hopefully yes is the idea. And then I used to keep before iPads, because I did this a long time ago, I used to keep a notebook that was, people have told me many times, I'm the most organized drummer they've met. And And I would like have this folder, like a binder, and I would have the band's name, and then it would be like all their songs, and then it would be like the next band's name, and then all their songs and all the tempos, everything written out. And so I could just show up and like open it and be like, oh, I know this one. It was pretty nuts. And then, you know, as technology is progressing, I got an iPad, and I learned how to do all of that with an iPad. And then you just hope the iPad doesn't fail, you know, in the middle of your performance. So I think I got a backup iPad at one point. So I was like, just nervous. But yeah, so that's how I did it.
Probably smart to get that backup. Just yeah. Saying. Yeah, I love your organization. Okay. I'm just, I like appreciate and applaud because I love organized things. I love being organized myself because I think it takes a lot of stress off of me. But then everyone else who's associated with me or wants to do something with me, they're like, she knows what's going on. But I'm just thinking about you and your brain. And just, okay, I'm thinking about 10 bands. I'm thinking about all the songs from all of those bands and thinking this has got to be the world's best method to keep you from getting Alzheimer's or dementia.
Yeah, maybe. Yeah, it might be.
Like just memorizing all of those, that's just astounding, I think. I mean, I'm speaking from a place where I know that I would never be able to do that. So the fact that you are, and you're so cool and chill about it, and you're like, yeah, yes, yes. So now are you in any other bands or is it just the Sun and the Saint?
Yeah. So I still like, once we created our band, which was about over 3 years ago now, I still kind of continue to play with other people for a little while. And then the amount of work that it takes to be is different. So now I'm not just like, I don't just show up to Sun and the Saint shows. I am Sun and the Saint with Reed, who is also Sun and the Saint. You know what I mean? So it's a completely different outlook and different way to be a musician is to be a member of your own band versus just showing up for shows, you know, because when you just show up for shows, you learn the songs and you show up. Like, it's pretty simple. But he and I are doing marketing, we're doing promoting, we're doing photo shoots, we're doing videos, we're doing like you name it, like we're doing all of it. And behind the scenes, it's more than I can even understand, honestly, which is great. But so no, so to answer your a long story long, I am only in Sun and the Saint now, which is great.
Well, now how did you come up with the name? Because I must know.
Yeah, I am kind of type A. I'm a little bit of type A and whatever the other type is, but and so is Reed. So he might be a little bit more extreme than I am. I call him Extreme Reed, and it's a good thing, but it's extreme. So he had a list that he had started like years ago, and he's like, let me pull out this list I have. And we don't always agree on everything. So it was like, yes, no, yes, no. And then I would like one. And he would be like, I don't like that. Like, I just don't like it. And I'd be like, okay. And then we would both finally agree on one. It was like, we had a name called Home. And then another, there was like another, it was like Stereo Fox. We had so many, like, I wish I could show you like the list. It was probably 1,000 names. Because we're both type A. Like, it's nuts. Like, we're insane. So, then we would find one that we liked, both of us, which was an absolute miracle. And we'd be like, okay, now we have to see if it's taken. And so we would go online and be like, no, it's taken. And we would like go through that same process over and over again until finally we found Sun and the Saint, which we knew was not taken. And we just had to make up our minds. I think someone booked us at a show, our first Sun and the Saint show, and we were like, we don't have a name. Like, we have to pick, we like literally have to pick one of these names like right now. So that's how we came up with it. Just, God bless you. It's kind of a funny story.
I love that. There's nothing like leaving it to the last minute.
Oh yeah. The night before.
That's crazy pants. Well, just for my own edification, because I am a blues fan and okay. I love jazz. I love, I don't know. I love folk music. I love, you know, early Americana, all sorts of, I think I like music. I don't know, that has a deep history that emerges out of place. So this question for me, you're a drummer. Do you have a favorite drummer and why, or who influenced you the most and why?
Yeah. That's a great question. Well, I first started playing jazz. And so I was studying all these like jazz players, which I thought was cool. It's a good way to start playing drums because it's complicated. So it made like my love for playing rock and pop a lot easier down the road. But I got really into Led Zeppelin and John Bonham. He's not just my favorite drummer. He's like almost everyone's favorite drummer. And I just like he's a beast. So he's like, not just like a great drummer. He plays so incredibly hard and he plays so in the pocket. And it's like, any drummer would want to play like that. So he was definitely a huge influence me in like the rock world. Will I ever play like him? No, but I find his playing like extraordinary.
Thank you. I love asking those questions because sometimes there are people, obviously not him, but sometimes there are people that I've never heard of that sort of semi have gotten lost to history, but they've informed, you know, whatever artist or musician I interview and ask this question about influence, inform them in ways. So it's kind of like a thing where I'm greedy with my information and I like to learn about people and that kind of thing. So thank you. So my second question, which is ridiculous to even call it the second question because I've asked you 10 million questions already, is did you grow up in a religious household? And, you know, if so, how has that kind of morphed and changed over time to where possibly you do or you don't have a relationship with something that's kind of outside of yourself?
Yeah, no, that's a great question. I did not grow up in a religious household. I actually grew up in the, I don't want to say opposite, but kind of opposite of a religious household. A little backstory. My mom was raised Southern Baptist and she was kind of did the whole thing when she was a kid until she was 18. And what she's told me is she just decided to just cut it off and go her own way. And so I was kind of raised by her, like not being around religion at all, like staying like really far away from it. So I didn't really grow up with like any spirituality, if that makes sense. It was kind of like anti-spirituality. And my dad kind of maybe was not that extreme, but it just wasn't part of like our life at all. My grandpa, on the other hand, is a devout Catholic. So he did drag me to mass like quite a few times when I was a kid. And that wasn't like my favorite thing, but I do appreciate it now because he was trying to, you know, show me some form of spirituality. But I'm glad that, you know, I had the experience that I had because it's pushed me to develop my own spirituality. And I feel like in today's world, like it's, for me, it's a necessity. It's not like, I don't know. It's kind of become a part of me, if that makes sense. Like I'm a devout meditation person. I meditate every morning and I like to connect and I like to feel good. And I like to, you know, develop my own personal relationship with the higher power, God, the universe, whatever you want to call it. So, yeah.
Okay. Color me intrigued. I spend most of my life intrigued. I don't know if you've noticed that yet, but so how long do you meditate for? Cause I'm, you know, I love meditation too, but I know there are so many different kinds and I know people who do 10 minutes, people who do an hour. How long do you meditate for in the morning?
Sure. Today I did 10 minutes. Yesterday I did 15. Sometimes I do 30. I think it depends on how much time I have. I feel like 10 to 15 is kind of my sweet spot. 30, I feel incredible. I used to do an hour meditation every day, and that was like that's a whole other story. But yeah, I did that for a long time. But yeah, it kind of varies, I guess, is the best answer for that.
Okay. And what kind of meditation do you do? Because I've discovered that for me, I kind of like doing like a guided meditation that's almost like a story a little bit, where kind of I can go on an adventure or use my imagination. So what kind of meditation do you like to do?
I like to switch it up too. So I have some that are guided that I put on headphones and I listen to. I think it just depends on the day. Like sometimes I'm really regimented and I stick to something, and then other times I'm like, you know what, I don't really feel like doing that, so I'm going to do something different. And I do, the one I seem to come back to the most is just affirmation. So it's like, I'll pick one or two affirmations and I just repeat them in my head over and over again until I feel the vibration of that affirmation. And it brings me into a much quieter space.
Absolutely. And besides the fact that I'm a bull in a china shop, when I go on these adventures, I'm like not knocking anyone over or breaking anything, which is like the best bonus ever. But yeah. I do want to ask you, have you noticed, of course, they have done a ton of research on meditators, right? And meditation and what this practice, you know, the benefits that meditation can provide. However, also, I have talked to, I live in Santa Fe. So, yeah. I mean, for God's sakes, please, if you go on a tour, come here. Okay.
Yes,
for the love of God. I have talked to some long-term meditators, and, you know, more than 50% have said that with the dedication to the practice, they have started noticing, I don't know if you'd call it synchronicity or supranormal events happening in their lives, a feeling of deep connection to the web that kind of connects everything in the universe, that they start having these experiences that are beyond, I don't know, what Western science calls quote unquote normal. Have you ever experienced, like, have you noticed meditation facilitating that?
Yeah, I think for me, meditation is kind of just like a piece of the spiritual pie, if that makes sense. Like I listen to a lot of podcasts. I read a lot of books. I'm like, I feel like I'm kind of studying it like throughout the day. I listen to stuff before I go to bed. Like I'm constantly working on immersing myself in the world that you speak of synchronicity. And I think with all of that, yeah, I feel like the more tapped into myself and into my, you know, God, universe, whatever anyone likes to call it, the more synchronistic my life becomes. And yeah, and you get I've had some bizarre experiences with that where it's like, how did that just happen? Because there's no way I had anything to do with that. Yeah. Yeah. Beautiful experiences.
I love that. I love that. I want to go back to your grandfather being a devout Catholic, because I dated a devout Catholic for 5 years. I am not Catholic. I'm a panentheist, which basically means I think everything is conscious and sentient and wants to communicate with us and is sacred. But I really, I know there's a big difference between being a child and being taken to mass and being an adult, which is what I was, and being taken to mass. And, you know, the parish that I went to was Portland, Oregon, very liberal. The archbishop was a White Sox fan, you know, and I'm a Cubbies fan. So we had these like things going on. But what really, you know, first of all, the church was ridiculously beautiful. It was Art Deco, just unreal. But then the liturgy, just after a while, became very meditative for me, because it's the same every time. And, you know, while the sermon might be different, because different priests have different ways of speaking or what they want to share, the liturgy was ultimately very, very calming for me. So there was something about just the cadence of the service of the mass. And it's also quite something, like you on stage at one of your concerts, to be surrounded by people who are kind of there for the same thing at your concerts. It's to enjoy your music, you know, cheer you on, yell, hopefully you're a badass from the crowd, you know, all sorts of things. They don't do that in the Catholic Church, and that's okay. But, you know, it's a bunch, it is a lot of people who are there together to worship and state their intention of what kind of life they're going to live and how they're going to show up in community. I'm sure as a child, that's a very different experience, but I do, you know, I do have an affinity for Catholicism. I think it is a beautiful, beautiful way of, you know, connecting with source and trying to puzzle out that divine energy that's just so huge.
Yeah.
There is something beautiful about it for me. I don't know if you ever experienced that as a child.
I did not. No, maybe later, because I've been back to Mass a couple of times and maybe enjoyed it more. But as a kid, no, I was like, sit down, stand up, sit down, stand. I was like, please, just want to go home. And it was acknowledged that I didn't enjoy it. But no, I think later in life, yeah, I can appreciate it now. And I appreciate, I've gone with my grandpa and I appreciate how much he appreciates it. So I get to kind of experience it through him, and he's so devoted, and it's such a beautiful thing to see. So I appreciate that part a lot.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. And I'm sure as a kid, you're like, will you please make up your mind? Do you want me to sit or stand? Like,
yeah.
Tell me.
Yeah, I'm not into it. Not into that part. I just want to sit. I don't want to kneel. I just want to sit. Just sit and listen.
That's so funny. Yeah. There was a period in my life where, I think it is interesting how human beings, the various ways that they reach out to try to connect to that ineffable source, you know, that source that we really like literally know nothing about. And so I'm a huge fan of going to like every church or every religious, you know, if they'll have me to experience just how other people communicate with the divine. And so I really appreciate what you say about your grandfather and like witnessing his devotion and his absolute conviction and love for that religion. It can be really inspirational and really gorgeous to, you know, to see someone and appreciate their love for their God. Does that make any sense?
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. 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 And I feel like I got really lucky besides that too, with like, in terms of appreciating, you know, different aspects of religion. I played in this band that was a kirtan band. I don't know if you're familiar with kirtan music at all. Are you?
Yes.
Okay. So I played in a kirtan band for many years, and we played all kinds of different churches. So we played like, I remember we played like a Jewish temple a couple of times, and I got to experience that service. And then we played all these spiritual living centers that are all over the United States. And so I got to experience all of the, you know, like Christian Science and all kinds of places. And I've obviously been a Mass, and I've been dragged to Southern Baptist churches before, my other side of the family. So I feel like I've been to quite a few of them. Yeah. And it's interesting because I feel like after I kind of did like a couple years of like, not like church touring, but kind of, that it was like, oh, everyone's just kind of the same thing, but in a different way. And then they have just a couple things that they don't agree with each other. That's fine. But yeah, it all just comes back to God, really.
That's fascinating. And I do think, now correct me if I'm wrong, kirtan is very meditative, isn't it?
Yeah, it's a lot of it is mantra. So the band I played for was like half English, half Sanskrit. But a lot of it was in Sanskrit. So you repeat the mantra and, you know, you see the same thing and all of those songs are like 7 to 10 minutes long too. So you're just like deep in a meditation. Yeah. It's pretty cool. Yeah.
I love that. That can be so healing. It reminds me, I don't know if you've heard of Taizé. which when I was in Portland, there was an Episcopal church that I went to that was built like a Gothic cathedral. You're like, there has to be bats in the belfry and maybe a vampire in the basement. It was like very dark and foreboding. Yes. But I loved it because of that. And so they would have every other Sunday, you know, at 5 p.m., they would have this gorgeous service where they would have healers, you know, people who had done this healing course. It would be lit by candlelight. Everybody would come in and sit in. I mean, this was, I wept because this was so powerful and so beautiful. I've never been, I need to find another place like that. But, and basically the band would start playing the song and the songs were listed. So, you know, and you would just sing the same thing over and over and over. And someone would, it was an hour long. Someone would guide and say, okay, you know, we're ready. The four healers are up front. Please, anyone who wants any kind of healing, please approach. And so everyone in the audience is holding space and singing for the people. And my God, the elderly people, a husband helping his wife who could barely walk, go up there and people laying hands on her. I mean, I thought, I can't deal with this. This is so powerful. And my heart was so full because, you know, I never went up to get a healing, but just being part of the community and being present to complete strangers, you know, some of whom were desperate for some sort of healing, just it felt so, I don't know, both evanescent and also very concrete at the same time, because I was physically there with a bunch of people supporting. Incredibly beautiful. And it sounds like that is exactly what you were doing.
Yeah. Yeah. We didn't have people come up for healings, but it was a similar environment. And there was a lot of crying in the audience, a lot of, you know, people having healing experiences. And I had my own healing experiences playing, like while I was playing. So I understand that vibration of like the room, like this like container and, you know, the community healing aspect of it. I'm grateful for that time. It was really special.
Yeah. Thank you. So I do ask my musicians this who have been on tour.
Yeah.
Will you share like a favorite tour memory?
Oh my goodness. Favorite tour. I feel like I've like been on the road so much. I have to think about that one for a minute.
Okay. We can move on to something else. Okay. Yeah. Because, it is a huge question. I mean, I guess I should ask you, do you love touring? You must, because you're on the road a lot.
Yeah, I really do. I think, I don't love physically driving myself. I'll say that much. It's not my favorite part. But I do love, like, there's aspects of it that I love. I love meeting new people. It's super fun. And that feels like, you know, it feels like me. It feels like right, you know, when I go around meeting a lot of people. And I love experiencing new venues, new stages, it's just like the whole environment of it is like when you get to do that every day, it just feels, to me, it feels right. It feels like me. So yeah, just feels like I'm in the right place.
Oh yeah. Yeah. Here I'm just like listening to you and thinking you guys would be perfect at Meow Wolf. I don't know if you've probably been to Santa Fe, but I don't know if you've been to Santa Fe since they built Meow Wolf a few years ago. I think Angela was here in February of this year and they went. And so they have this really cool stage with, it's in this, I mean, I can't even explain what it is, almost like a bizarre fun house museum house that's been turned inside out, where there's this like story that's going on, but also you can walk through the refrigerator to get into another room. It's like a fun house for adults.
Yeah, I've seen videos of that. Is there one in Vegas or on the way?
Yes, they're expanding. Yeah.
Okay. That's the one I've seen on the way to Vegas. I didn't know there was one in Santa Fe. That's really cool. Yeah, I know what you're talking about.
The OG is in Santa Fe.
Oh, very cool. Okay.
Yes. Idea. Anyway, right. Their stage is really badass, and their the room for performances is, I would call it intimate, but also fabulous, if that makes any sense. So think about it.
Okay. We'll see you there.
Well, Yes. And I'm counting on it. I'm looking at my watch that I'm not wearing right now. So there you go. I'd love to ask the main question of the podcast, which is, I would so appreciate it if you could share a story that, you know, it could be one story, it could be two stories of something that you consider to be magical or miraculous or mysterious. I've had every kind of story you could ever imagine under the sun. As a matter of fact, this month I'm reproducing all of the ghost stories that I've had on the podcast. So all that to say, everything's legitimate. I'd love to hear whatever you'd like to share.
Okay, something that's miraculous or magical?
Yes, yes, yes.
Yeah, I feel like I've had a lot of miraculous things happen in my life, a lot of like serendipity. I guess the one that's just coming to mind is honestly meeting Reed. I feel like it was very serendipitous. I don't know if it was like, yeah, I don't know. It felt very like otherworldly, if that makes sense. It like, I felt like I knew him the moment I met him, and I was kind of on this journey before I met him. I had decided that I wanted to create my own band, and I was out networking constantly. I was like meeting as many people as I could. I was like joining way too many bands and like playing for too many people. And like, I was kind of like, you know, and I met him, and it might sound lame, but I kind of just like felt like time just went like, tch. And I remember looking at him and being like, oh my God, I think that's him. And it was, it was definitely a moment in time I won't forget. And
Well, you know, that's interesting that you say that, because I've had multiple experiences like that in my life. I graduated from college, so I know exactly what you're talking about. I graduated from college, could not get anyone to hire me to save my life. And got placed with a temp agency. They sent me to this company in Skokie, Illinois. I worked there for 3 months, and someone said, hey, one of the VPs wants to interview you for a permanent position. And I was like, okay, like I'm just a leaf on the wind. Who knows where I'm going to go at this point? And I walked into that conference room for the interview, and my friend Linda was sitting across from me. I didn't know Linda at the time. I walked into that room. I locked eyes with her, and it was like, there was this palpable, powerful sense of coming home. And I looked at her and I was like, I mean, this gobsmacked me, because I was at like 22 or 23. I'd never had this experience before, but all of a sudden it came into my mind. Oh my God, there you are. I've met you before. I know you. And she said, I felt the same way. It was like you walked in and I was like, oh my God. We've known each other in other lifetimes. It was just everything, like time froze. And so this happened to me about two or three other times in my life where I met someone and it's like this instant recognition of, oh my God, there you are. And I always know we're going to do work together, me and the person. And it sounds like exactly what happened with you and Reed.
Yeah. Yeah, I definitely did. And since we met, we've had experiences like that together with other people where it's like, yeah, kind of bizarre.
What do you mean? You mean like you guys are like together in the world and then you meet other people and you're both like, oh my gosh.
Yeah. Like experiences like, okay. So I didn't set out blindly on this mission. I've written everything down. I wrote him down too, like 2 years before I met him. And I wrote down everything. I wrote down the type of person he is, what he's into, like the qualities that I'd, and it wasn't him specifically, it was what I wanted in a partner, musically and intimately too. And, it's weird. So I've been doing this my whole life. I've written stuff down, and so that's why I'm like, wow, I wish I could like think of all the things. There's been like so many like that I've written down, and I look at it years later and I'm like, oh, it's word for word. Like, it's not like, oh, it's kind of that. It's like, literally I spelled it out. So I've had that happen many years. I believe in the power of humans. I believe in our power, our ability to co-create our own environments. And it never gets boring. It never gets like, oh yeah, I knew that would happen. I'm always like, what? That's crazy. And then I like look back and I'm like, that's so cool. I literally wrote it down. I get so excited. And I've done it for everything. I've done it for this band. I wrote this band down. I wrote what I wanted. I wrote like that I wanted an album that I was proud of. And yeah, if I look back, it's kind of bizarre. It's just weird. And so he and I have had that that same intention as, you know, as a unit moving forward. We have written things down that have happened now. And yeah, it's pretty cool. It's
wow. Fun. Like yeah. The power of manifestation. You're just, so first of all, this makes me love you even more for how organized you are, because you're so organized. You're writing down your manifestation, like what you'd like to bring into the world or what you'd like to witness, and it's happening. And then as it's happening, you can go back and say, oh my gosh, everything that I wrote down about my desire for the band or, you know, my bandmate or whatever, it's all there. It's all there. And then Reed showed up and you're like, oh my gosh, let me just check this checklist and see. Wow. And he fits all the criteria there. That's, I mean, that is powerful work, by the way. I'm sure you know this.
Yeah, I do. I'm grateful that I've lived like that for a long time. And it just makes me really look forward to the future, you know, like knowing that I have like evidence of that, you know, that what I've written like actually comes true. And not everything I write everything down. So not everything has, but maybe it will.
Yeah. Yeah. I was just thinking, you know, sometimes in the middle of the night when I can't sleep, I'm like, I wish someone would deliver a chocolate cake to the door right now. And
yeah,
and then it doesn't happen. And I'm like, what the hell, dude? Why isn't this happening? You know, there's one other point that I'd like to just revisit because it's interesting to me. Just speaking about Taizé and Kirtan and your mm-hmm. travels, you mentioned that you had some healings while you were playing. And so how does that happen? Are you chanting as well? Are you just playing the drums? I mean, I don't know. I'm so curious.
Sure. Yeah. I sometimes when I play drums, I get like transported and like have like, if I really get like tapped in, I'm so connected to the earth, first of all, and I'm so connected spiritually. And I feel like sometimes it's not really me playing anymore. And, yeah, I got lucky. And I'm still lucky. In my band now, I feel like I get totally transported because I get to play what I want to play. And, but in the past, like the specific, like healing experiences, the Kirtan band I played in, they would just go nuts. Like everyone would just like let loose and like solo. And I would just like get to just like turn like wild animal woman, you know, just like on the toms, just like losing my mind. And like, I could feel people like healing in the audience, like from that too. And it was like healing me back. And like, I don't know, just like a full outer body experience. Like I haven't really talked about this much, but like I've even had experiences where like I had a hard time walking after playing because I just like let loose like so much, you know? Yeah, definitely a lot of tears, definitely a lot of just movement. Cause I feel like if you open yourself that much to like an energy within yourself, in the music that's literally like coursing through your veins and the people on stage and the people in the room, like anything can happen really. So I feel lucky I got to experience that. It was pretty wild.
That's gorgeous. That is gorgeous. And I'm not surprised because, you know, I'll just tell you this. I don't know if I've shared this on the podcast, but last year I worked for George R.R. Martin's bookstore, Beastly Books, during Halloween. And I didn't watch much of Game of Thrones. Sorry, George. But I did. I was familiar with Hodor, who like held the gates or whatever. And so that actor, Christian Nairn, came over Halloween. And I didn't know that he was an international DJ. Anyway, he DJs at the theater next door. And it was Halloween. It was a full moon. And I was already feeling wiggy that day. I was like, I feel wiggy. And here I am at work. I'm in full costume. You know, I'm thinking, okay, can I dance at this point? I don't know, but we're going to go. We're going to see. And I ended up the music, it was something, music has this power to, I think, take us out of ourselves. We transcend everything. Yeah. I found moves. I was not a bull in a china shop. I actually could dance. And I felt like that night after dancing for 2 hours, that I had just left so much of my past behind. It was like this catharsis. It was this full body exorcism, if you want to call it that, but in joy and like revelation and fun. And I mean, when you are writing your songs and you think about what you want to create, do you ever consider like, what is this going to do for me, you know, bodily, mentally, when I play it? But what about the audience? Do you ever think about that?
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. I feel like we thought about that a lot when we wrote this record, because we had, we started with 27 songs and it was like, a lot of them were slow songs. And I thought, well, we can't have that. We got to like, you know, have a couple that like lift the audience up. Like we want to play this thing. Like we have a vision of us playing like a, you know, like good sized venue. So like we better show up. Right. So we definitely wrote with that in mind, like, okay, I want to write a song that like moves everything. I want to write a song that feels like, you know, like Queen wrote a song. Like that's the kind of stuff that we thought of too. And then obviously some more like subdued, like heart centered, slowed down stuff. But yeah, we definitely had that in mind. Not necessarily writing for other people. I think that's a huge mistake as an artist, but for the intention of what kind of energy do we want to bring? Like that's what we wrote with in mind, if that makes sense.
Oh yeah. And I have to say, just going over your Instagram page. Do people say that anymore? Your Insta. I think that's what the cool kids say. Anyway, I've noticed that there's just so much joy. At least I see the joy, even with the slow songs, to be honest. I mean, your Insta is very playful, which I appreciate. Oh my gosh. Yes. The videos are playful. You guys are playful. There's a great sense of fun and almost like, I don't know, I get this sense of you're very like, come along with us on our journey. Like we want to bring you, like you're very inclusive, like come play with us, come hang, come have a good time. I don't know where I'm getting all this, but this is what I get from your Insta and all. Yeah. And all your amazing just material there. And I think that's important because, you know, it goes back to the keraton, right? And the healing of the community. And it goes back to me talking about Taze and the community coming together and supporting and holding a container for healing. You're kind of like, hey, let's build community. You're invited. You're invited. You're invited. You're invited. That whole side of the auditorium is invited. Come hang out with us and have fun and feel good. That's just what I get. I'm just telling you.
Oh my God. Thank you for sharing that. That actually means a lot because we spent a lot of time on our social media and we're on every single platform. And we put a lot of thought and a lot of care and a lot of heart into it. But even beyond the social media aspect, that's exactly what I want people to feel. And it's what I want in my life. Like the word fun, when you said that, like, that's exactly what I want to do with my life. I just, at this point, like, I just want to have fun. So like, if that's coming through, that makes me really happy to hear. So thank you for sharing that.
Mission accomplished. Paloma, thank you so much for being on the show. This has been such a great conversation. You are very funny just in general. I think you're funny. I don't know if you think you're funny, but I think you're funny. You have a great sense of humor.
Thank you so much. That means
a lot. And thank you for all of your stories and just sharing so much. And it's really amazing to meet a fellow like co-conspirator in the magic of the universe. So yeah, I'm excited that and you two are creating such beauty. And that's a big deal for me. We need more people who are creating beauty. So thank you.
Thank you for saying that. And thank you so much for having me. This has been so much fun. Okay, talk about fun. This has been big.
I try to make it as painless as possible. So without further ado, here is Paloma's favorite tour memory. One of my favorites was getting to perform with Slash from Guns N' Roses
It wasn't really a tour per se, but a show in Cabo, Mexico. I knew I was going to perform with him, but what I didn't know was that it was about to be one of the coolest days and nights of my life. I was incredibly nervous around him during soundcheck, but I really tried to keep myself together. He had his back to me while setting up, and we only met very briefly. It wasn't until I counted in the song that I knew how special this was going to be. I counted 1, 2, 3, 4, and Slash immediately turned his entire body towards me, stared right at me, and jammed with just me the entire song. It was one of the coolest experiences of my life and very unexpected. The show itself only got better when we finished our set and then the crowd started chanting, "Sweet Child, Sweet Child, Sweet Child," which is Slash's signature song. The other drummer who was there didn't know the song, but I did. I knew a lot of songs at that point, so I got back on stage and finished out the night performing Sweet Child with Slash himself. I lack words to express the feeling I still have thinking back on that night. Definitely one for the books.
Wish they all could be only California dreams. I could cross that line, headed for the summertime, driving up and down the coastline, headed for the sunshine, looking for a smooth ride.
Let's get started. I cannot express enough the complete kindness and generosity of spirit that both Paloma and Reed have shown me. It was just a complete joy interviewing both of them, getting to know them, hearing them share their stories, and just frankly knowing that they are in the world bringing their goodness to it. I actually opened the mail one day and there was a fabulous, brand new, beautiful, shiny LP, some stickers and other swag, and it was just so over the top and wonderful that I can truly testify that they're both fabulous human beings. There will be a link to their Insta, their website, buy some swag, everybody, and to their Spotify so that you can check out Sun and the Saint and experience all of the grooviness that they're bringing into the world. But I do need to remember that this episode is all about Paloma, so I'm going to finish how I usually do and say, hey, thank you for listening, and here's my one request. Be like Paloma. I would say be organized, but I feel like, you know what, listeners, you are pretty organized. I mean, you do listen to this podcast every week, but Paloma has really taken organization and manifestation to the next level. And because she's so on top of what she wants for her life, of who she wants in her life, she just steps out there and makes a list, and it happens. So that, to me, speaks of a deep connection with the world, with the creativity and abundance in the world, and with the idea that she is absolutely on the right path. So be like Paloma and dream and write and list your wishes and your desires into being. Co-create with this world. Partner with this world. And yeah, you know what I'm going to say. Pretty soon, if we're all doing that, if we're all engaging and partnering in co-creation, can you even imagine how rad this world is going to be? I hope you're looking forward to the interview with Reed tomorrow. I certainly am. So now I need to get on it and produce his. Thanks for listening, everyone. And until the next episode, I hope you're listening to groovy music like Sun and the Saint. I hope you're laughing with just wild sheer abandon. And I hope you're dancing while everybody is watching.